This tape is called Performance 3, Brain Surgery, or Controlling Nerves. The first thing I would like to say is that there is no quick fix to getting rid of disabling nerves. Now, there are a couple of words. What does it mean, disabling nerves? The first part of the word, disabling, starts with a prefix, dis. Dis is a Latin word for dividing or taking apart. For example, if you distrusted someone, your trust would be divided. You wouldn't trust them. If you dismembered someone, you would divide their body, cut off the members or arms or legs, dismember. If you were disabled, it would mean your ability was cut apart or cut off. So to be disabled means to cut off your ability. If you have disabling nerves, you have nerves that are interfering or cutting off your ability to perform or play well. Nerves that are cutting off your ability. Have you ever experienced disabling nerves? Have you ever had times where your nervousness kept you from playing as well as you did at home? If you have, you've had a case of disabling nerves. It could be during a performance class, or a performance, or even at your lesson. It is important at this point to draw a distinction between disabling nerves and ableing nerves. If disabling nerves cause us to perform worse, then ableing nerves help us to play better than we would at home or in the practice room. Sometimes we get the mistaken notion that all nervousness is bad. This is not true. To be completely without nervousness can be equally as damaging, too. Let me give you an example. Carol Burnett, a great comedian actress, tells us in her book, On My Own, of an occasion when she performed without nervousness. Carol Burnett tells a story of how she began getting her first big breaks as a performer and comedian in New York. She was on the Ed Sullivan Show. She was being interviewed on TV talk shows. Things were going great after a lot of hard work. She was working in a nightclub at this time, and things are typically slow in nightclubs on Monday nights, but not for Carol's show. People were lined up around the block to get in to see her. She tells of how she was putting on her makeup and fixing her hair and getting ready to do her act, and she noticed that she felt as cool as a cucumber with all the success she had been having. She remembered thinking how silly she had been for getting nervous before performing. She felt that she had found the secret, and she was never going to be nervous again. When the time came, she walked out on stage, gave the cue for the pianist to begin, shot a confident look at the audience, and then started to sing. She finished the first line, and no one laughed. She sang the second line, and still nothing happened. They were just sitting there staring at her. People always laughed by this time. She could sense that it was going to be disastrous. She didn't want to be there anymore, and she had 20 more minutes left in her act. When she finished, she knew exactly why she was a flop. She had been too cocky, too sure of herself, she says. She wasn't human anymore, and it showed. It had affected her whole attitude. Have you ever wanted to be alone, just get away from people after you've done some silly thing? Well, that's the way she felt. She wanted to get to her dressing room as quickly as she could. She didn't want to see anybody. As she turned into the narrow hallway to get to her dressing room, there was a man coming toward her from the other end. He was drunk and needed to use the men's room. The hallway was so narrow, she had to press herself against the wall so the man could get into the door of the men's room. She held her head down, but the man stopped and raised her chin up. She stopped crying for a moment when she noticed that he had a nice smile and kind eyes, and thought maybe things were going to go better. He looked at her and said, "Hey, aren't you the little lady that just sang downstairs?" She told him that she was. He continued, "Well, you stink," and then walked into the men's room. Carol made it to her dressing room for a big cry. What made it worse, she knew she had another performance to do at midnight. How was she going to go on? When she went on stage for the second performance that night, she had butterflies in her stomach and a little more humility. She finished the story by saying things went a lot better that night, and she never forgot her lesson. Now that you see the difference between disabling nerves and ableing nerves, we're going to turn our attention to the development of these two types of nervousness. First, let's talk about the causes of disabling nerves. There are really only three reasons or causes for disabling nerves: lack of preparation, lack of cell — some call this musicality, but for our purposes we will call it lack of cell. The third reason people obtain a case of disabling nerves is pride. Let's take a look at each of those reasons one at a time. Number one, lack of preparation. To play well, you must have the confidence and knowledge that you can play and perform your piece well. If you don't have that confidence, you are not ready to play. You may remember from the first performance tape, we talked about Bomber Bob. Bomber Bob had learned to play his piece perfectly by about the fourth time he practiced it. For some reason, Bomber Bob always expects to play it perfectly first time at his lesson or at the recital. This is a laughable expectation. You must practice your piece and memorize your piece so well that you can play it perfectly first time. That is important enough to say again. You must practice your pieces until you can play them perfectly the first time. It's unrealistic to expect to play it perfectly in your lesson or in a performance the first time if you've never been able to do it that way before. It takes a long time for anyone to get to that point, and we shouldn't feel like life is discriminating against us if it does take a long time to get our pieces to that point. I frequently tell my students that if we divided the amount of time it took to play a piece into 100 parts, that it takes just as long to perfect the piece the last 4% as it does the first 96% of the way. Furthermore, if we were to divide the last 4% into 100 parts, it would again take as much time to perfect the last 4% as it does to perfect the first 96%. If you think you are playing your piece well, try using a tape recorder. Tape yourself, and then listen to yourself play. Are you playing the way you thought you played? If you can't play it perfectly for a tape recorder, then you probably can't play it perfectly for your teacher or for an audience. Try the tape recorder trick. Many artists will not perform a piece in public until they have learned it for a year or more. For beginning and intermediate students, that is a little unreasonable, but it does give you an idea of how professionals view the importance of preparation before performance, and it also gives you an idea of the price they are willing to pay to make sure they are prepared. If the most talented musicians take a year to prepare a piece for performance, what does that suggest to you about preparing your pieces? The second reason for disabling nerves was lack of cell. Cell being spelled S-E-L-L, lack of cell. When people go to the store to buy something, it is because they are already sold on the product. They either were sold on the product during a commercial on TV or a commercial on radio. They may have been sold on the product because their mother or father always used it, or a friend recommended it. They may have been sold on it because they saw their favorite movie star use it at the cinema. They are sold on the product, so they buy it. It is the same with performing. If you want your audience to buy into the piece, to applaud it, to enjoy it, then they must be sold on it. Now, a store owner tries to sell his products by packaging the item in an attractive way. Oh, they package their products in clean wrapping paper, or shine their apples, or get a very gifted artist to design a beautiful box to put the product in. As performers, we must be concerned with packaging. We must be concerned with selling our piece. Packaging involves several things. A, is the piece you selected to play appropriate for your audience? If you were invited to play a piece for church during the service, it would be pretty hard to sell the folk song, "Oh, the Yellow Rose of Texas," or "Ain't Nothing But a Hound Dog." If you were asked to play something for the halftime show at a football game, They would think you were nuts if you played Beethoven's Waldenstein Sonata or a hymn arrangement. If you were asked to play at a rest home for the elderly, I don't suppose you would elicit an enthusiastic response. If you performed, we will rock you. B. Are you performing a piece that is well within your abilities? I judge at festivals and attend events all the time where students, in an effort to impress the judge, play something at the horizon of his abilities. They perform a piece that they barely have the technical ability to play. This is performer's suicide. I know it's suicide because I've tried it. When your mother brings home bananas, sometimes they are still a little green, aren't they? Have you ever gotten a little anxious to eat one of those green bananas? They stick to your tongue and taste very woody. Just as it takes time for fruit to ripen, it takes time for your pieces and your technique to ripen. When you select a piece to perform, select a piece that is ripe. Select one that is well within your ability to play. It may be a piece you passed off a year ago. As you develop confidence in your ability to perform, you can then select pieces that are closer to the horizon of your abilities. But always be aware of the risk involved. Even the great Horowitz, at his much-celebrated concert in Moscow, started the concert off with two relatively easy pieces before launching into the firework pieces that brought the house down. C. Do you know what the message of the piece is? Can you express that message? Brahms said, "If I could express in words what I express in my music, then I would have no need for music." Music expresses and communicates ideas and feelings that cannot be expressed in words. End quote. It is up to you, as the artist, as the pianist, with the help of your teacher, to figure out what the piece is trying to communicate. Some people call this musicianship. To give you an example of what we mean when we say express the message of the piece, let me give you an example. Let's take the following dialogue, said by a boy to his girlfriend on a moonlit summer evening on the girl's front porch. "Oh, Sally, you're the greatest. Your eyes, they sparkle. Your hair shimmers in the moonlight. Your teeth are like pearls. Your lips are like the red, red rose. You are so much fun to be around. Goodbye." Now, that does not sound any more romantic than if I had just ordered a 25-pound sack of horse feed. Now let's listen to it again. "Oh, Sally, you are the greatest. Your eyes, they sparkle. Your hair shimmers in the moonlight. Your teeth are like pearls. Your lips are like the red, red rose. You are so much fun to be around. I can't stand it." Did that sound different? Did it work? Did it carry the right message? Or did it sound a little too slurpy? Listen again. "Oh, Sally, you're the greatest. Look at your eyes. Look how they sparkle. And your hair, how it shimmers in the moonlight. Your lips are so red." Did that sound different? Did that carry the right message? Let's give you a chance. Let's take the phrase, "Oh, great," and see how many different meanings the same two words can have. Say "oh great" right now to practice. Don't just sit there. You need to practice your line. Go on, say "oh great." There you go. Now I'm going to give you different situations. You are going to say "oh great" the way you would in this certain situation. How would you say "oh great" if you had just won $1 million? How would you say "oh great" if you had just dropped a bottle of syrup on the floor? You probably wouldn't say "oh great," right? Now, how would you say "oh great" if you went to the piano to practice and your mom told you that you didn't have to practice today? Do you see how with those same two words you can have many different meanings? It is the same with music. What message do you want to communicate with the piece that you are playing? And is the message that you are communicating the one that is appropriate for the piece? Work hard with your teacher to determine the mood or message of the piece. If you're bored with a piece, then no matter how you are shaping the phrases, boredom is going to come across. If you are thinking of the date you had last night, or the date you wish you had last night, or the fun you had with your friend down the road yesterday, then that's what's going to come across. You've got to concentrate and sell the piece. Create the emotion and know what emotion you want to send across to your audience and what message you want them to receive, and then send it, say it through music. Do you remember the third reason for disabling nerves? It was pride, wasn't it? Pride can be a very healthy thing. It can also be a very damaging, destructive force in your performance and in your life. As a positive force, pride is defined as self-respect. This self-respect is when you take pleasure and satisfaction in your own work. You respect yourself to do your very best. Another definition of pride is self-respect gone too far. It is an excessively high opinion of oneself. Some people call it conceit or stuck on oneself. This type of pride has at its roots hate for others. The person who has this type of pride tries to make himself look good by pulling others down. Perhaps you have sat through a recital or a ball game with someone of this nature. They have nothing good to say about anyone else but themselves. The Greeks tell the myth of a very handsome young teenage youth who was so attractive that even he thought his good looks were absolutely wonderful. This young man's name was Narcissus. Narcissus grew to love his good looks so much that one day, as he was passing by a clear pond, he happened to look in and see his reflection, and there he stayed forever, unable to pull himself away, being so enamored of his own beauty. This is a very famous story. There even is a flower named after Narcissus. It looks like a daffodil. Now, what does pride, self-love, narcissism have to do with getting nervous while performing? It has a lot to do with it. If a performer is worried about what others think about him, it will nearly always cause nervousness. You cannot control other people and how they will react to you. I once had a student who refused to perform. When I asked him why, he said that he was afraid of what the girls would think if he made a mistake. He was a bundle of nerves, particularly in front of girls, at any time. His thoughts centered on himself and what others thought of him, particularly what the girls would think of him, rather than centering his thoughts on others and what he could do for them. Of the three reasons for developing a case of disabling nerves, this reason, pride, is the hardest to overcome. The other two you can deal with through practicing more and practicing more correctly. Pride is dealt with by changing your thoughts and changing your character. Spending less time on what you can get from others and more time on what you can give to others. And herein lies a secret of a happy life. A great Greek philosopher counseled, "Know yourself." Another great person added, "You will find yourself only as you lose yourself in service to others." I saw a poster in the mall the other day. It showed a picture of a man surrounded by fancy cars, computers, girls, boats, and a huge house in the background with servants standing on the lawn. He was leaning against a Rolls Royce, as I recall. The man had rings on his fingers, a fancy suit, and a big smile on his face, and a cigar in his hand. And the caption to the poster said, "He who collects the most toys wins." Well, this poster was as funny as it was false. It is not the one that collects the most that wins, but it is the person who serves the most that wins. It could be stated another way. It's not the one that collects the most that wins, but it's the one who gives the most who wins. And the more you give, the more you get for some reason. And what is it that you get? What is it that you win? Happiness. And if he's a performer, he wins the ability to perform with confidence and beauty. He comes into contact with all that is good within his soul and is able to share that goodness, that virtue, with others. We have spent quite a bit of time discussing three things that lead to disabling nerves: lack of preparation, lack of cell or musicality, and too much pride. Now let's turn our attention to the solution to these problems. I don't have all the answers, but I have a few suggestions. What do you suppose the solution to a lack of preparation would be? Yeah, I think that the solution to lack of preparation would be to keep practicing until you have the confidence and experience of playing it perfectly the first time. But you know, it's not like Vince Lombardi said, it's not practice that makes perfect, but it's perfect practice that makes perfect. You can practice mistakes and you'll just get better at the mistakes. Talk to your teacher about how to practice, how to prepare a piece for performance so that you can play it perfectly the first time. Prepare right. Prepare perfectly. Number two, the solution to lack of cell is work with your teacher until you can express the right message of the piece. Work it through until you have the utmost confidence in your ability to sell the piece. If you can't, try a different piece. You will perform your best when you play your most favorite piece. Number three, the solution to pride is more difficult. Start looking for opportunities to serve unselfishly, whether it is with the piano or in any other area. Look for ways to serve without anyone else knowing. Be a secret service agent. As you use your talents in the service of others, you will be given more talents. It's an eternal law. As you use your talents in the service of others, you will be given more talents. You will find more satisfaction. You will be blessed with more happiness. Play at rest homes. Play at senior citizen centers. Play for children's daycare centers. There's lots of different places that you could go to serve, to play. If you know a shut-in that has a piano, go in and play for them. I remember when I was in college, I was working very hard at my music and at the piano. I was working so hard that all of a sudden I looked at myself one day and I thought, I'm spending all this time on myself and I feel myself shriveling. And so I looked around for an old folks' home that I might be able to play for. And I found one. When I went there, it was an interesting type of old folks' home. It wasn't the type of home where there were a lot of wealthy people there. There were a lot of people who were forgotten. There were forgotten people there, poor people. And I walked in and the piano was way out of tune. I mean, way out of tune. You could hardly recognize the melody when you played on it. And I sat down and I looked around and I talked to a few of the people before I played. And that was scary. That was really scary. Because some of them just looked at me and they didn't say anything back. They had been forgotten. They had been unloved so long, they had no desire to speak anymore. Well, I sat down and I played a few songs, and I sang a few songs. I didn't like to sing, but I sang a few songs anyway. I thought, these people probably can't tell a good voice from a bad voice, and so they probably won't mind my voice, but they'll probably enjoy it, and anything they would enjoy. So I played a few songs, and I sang a few songs, and then I left. I came back the next week, did it again. I came back the next week, and each time that I started to play, I would also talk to them. And in between songs, I would talk to them. Pretty soon, I started playing less and talking more. After the weeks passed, people who had never spoken for a long time began to speak to me. I didn't know these people, except to come in once a week. And they began to speak to me, people who had not spoken for years. And the nurses would come up and say, do you realize that person has not spoken at all? And then pretty soon they said, do you realize these people are sitting in their chairs waiting for you to come 4 and 5 hours before you arrive? Boy, did that ever lift and build me. And you know, the strange thing was, I went there to serve them, but I walked away having been served, and lifted. Use your imagination. Don't worry about fame. Fame is nothing. It's fleeting. You're well known one day, you're not well known another. I remember sitting down next to an elderly man at a restaurant, a fast food restaurant. And I sat down next to him on a picnic bench and I started talking to him. It was a beautiful day outside. It was the evening. It was beginning to cool off. And I started talking to him. The man started sharing with me his life. And I thought, to look at this old man, and he had a cane, he could barely walk, he was so old. And I thought, to look at this man, you would think he was, and excuse me for saying this, you would think he was nothing, that he had not done anything. But yet, he had held positions, he had had wealth, he had had trust, he had had all kinds of things. But now, he was older, and it was gone. Don't seek for fame. Seek for ways to serve and use your talent to serve. And you will find so many opportunities. Every once in a while, a student comes up to me and says, I would like to take from you because your students have lots of opportunities to perform. And I would like to perform more. And I look at them and I think inside, you don't need to come to me to perform at a lot of places. There are lots of people that would love to hear you. Go to them. Play. Do it. Once again, use your imagination. Go to your teacher. Figure out all the places that you can go and serve. And if you're not worried about people seeing you and people recognizing this marvelous thing that you're doing, then you will find that, as I did, that you'll be the one that is served. You'll be the one that's lifted. You'll be the one that wins happiness as well as them. Now, when you have confidence in your ability to play your piece well, confidence that you can communicate your piece well, and your ambition is to serve rather than be served, you will find your disabling nerves are exchanged for a case of ableing nerves. Another word for ableing nerves is excitement. When it comes time to perform, you'll have butterflies, all right, but those butterflies will be butterflies of excitement. And so when you feel those butterflies, don't say, oh, I'm so nervous. Say, all right, I feel butterflies. I'm getting excited. All right, I can't wait to get out there. You know, bite a tree, bite a dog, you know, do something, go out, you know, get excited. Excitement to get out there and share what you have worked so hard to gain. Finally, in your quest for excellence in performance, it is important to remember that even the most gifted of performers make mistakes. Anton Rubinstein said that in his early years, he would make enough mistakes during a recital to write a whole new piece. Another great seeker of excellence in performance, the singer Beverly Sills, beautiful opera singer, said, I wish I had $1 million for every high note I missed. If your performance is so lousy that it depended on that one high note, it is a lousy performance, even if you made the high note. If the performance is wonderful and you missed one high note, how can 10 seconds of a 2.5 to 3 hour evening make any difference? Who cares if you missed it? The next time you'll make it. It's the whole performance I go for. That's a good attitude. It's unrealistic to think that you're going to play everything perfect all the time. Everyone has their down performances. Everyone has their good nights, too. As Beverly Sills says, everyone has their share of turkeys. I had an opportunity to perform with Frank Sinatra once. On the same stage, he went on one time, I went on another in Washington, D.C., and as I looked, he had a bad night. He had such a bad night that television cut him off and put on a commercial in his place in the middle of his song. We all have our bad nights. We all have our good nights. Don't worry about the bad ones. You'll have your share of those. You'll have your share of good ones. We can only expect that you do your best. That's all. Don't expect any more. Well, it's time to stop. I do hope, though, that you'll find ways to use your talent to serve and lift others so that you can find the great happiness that life has to give.